So why is a nice girl on our own heading to King's Landing?
I'm going to kill the Queen.
Tony of House Teflon, thank you for coming, sir.
Well, thank you for having me. I really do appreciate the offer.
We are so excited.
I'm excited.
This is Game of Bones. Thank you for listening. It's our second episode of Season 7. Hannah and Tony are best friends. I just found out because they were on a panel together at Con of Thrones.
We were on what was the name of our panel?
I should know this.
We were on the theory. We did a panel on crazy
crackpot.
Theories.
Oh, the crackpot theory theories panel.
In the Song of Ice and Fire, and it was really, yeah, really fun. Everyone was really into it, and we had a really good time.
I heard it was the best panel. That's just what I heard.
That's
though.
Just what I heard too. Yeah.
I heard it. You know, I'm not saying us. This.
I knew you were going to be great on it, Tony. We've crossed paths in the fandom from the content and work that you're putting out regarding the series on YouTube, and it was just, we had a feeling it would take Con of Thrones by storm if you were on selected panels, like the Stannis argument, the legendary one you had with our friend David J. Peterson.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you got to put people, you know, you got to tell people the facts and stuff. You know? Sometimes people, they overlook certain things just to help their case, but we straightened that out. And I think probably he never was on a panel with someone who really likes Stannis as much as me. I think he was ready for that.
He was so excited to tear Stannis down, but I'm glad that you were there to have his back.
I'm the hand of the king for Stannis Baratheon, the one true king of Westeros.
You should introduce yourself to everyone that's listening because we're friends, but, you know. This is Game of Bones, and it's a podcast and stuff.
All right. My name is Tony Teflon the Don. I have a YouTube channel, Teflon TV. I'm also a children's book author, and I write music on the side also.
I wanted to tell the entourage story really badly, but I don't know if we have time for it today. You've got to leave so soon.
We could definitely do that at another time, though, but it was funny. I got a million war stories.
So, past few weeks, Con of Thrones, and then the premiere of Season 7. It's pretty exciting right now for Game of Thrones fans.
I would have to agree. Con of Thrones, what an exciting time. You know, I went down there. I didn't know what to expect. You know, mm-hmm. I just went down there hoping for the best, and it far blew my expectations. I really can't wait till next year. And everyone that was there, only thing they kept saying was, it's over already. It's over already.
I know. I still can't believe that it's over.
Yeah, and I've been keeping in contact with people on the app too. So, you know, it was a very good crowd of people, bunch of great costumes, just all over, just a great time.
I'm hoping that we can redo the Stannis appreciation panel. I want to put you two together again and see what happens.
Well, I think we'll do his homework next time.
Well, this is our second episode of the week, and we're going to dive more diligently into the episode. We've asked you guys a few questions. Hannah asked you guys a few questions actually this week.
Yeah, so for those of you, we mentioned it on our last episode, but for those of you who aren't familiar with our format, we do a second episode in the middle of the week where we get a little bit deeper into specific things that had happened. I think that so much of our first episode is us trying to process and laugh and talk about everything that we just saw. And now that we've had some space over the last couple of days to rewatch the episode a couple dozen times and to read a million articles and analysis and go through message boards, we now have a couple more questions that I think are more important than like our initial gush. Before we dive into those first three, there is a big piece of news that we got this week that I thought would be important for us to touch on because it is Comic-Con week. And so, of course, there's lots of stuff happening and we'll probably see a few more things come out over the next couple of days. But we have a new trailer after the first episode has already aired that is giving us a glimpse into the next couple episodes. And I don't know if you guys have had a chance to take a look at that and think about that trailer that we just got, I think this afternoon, today.
We can watch it together.
All right.
Let's do it.
Pop it off.
Have you seen it yet?
Oh, well, you know, I'm on that stuff, though. I got a YouTube channel, and there's a lot of competition out there, so I've done a breakdown of it, but I'm ready to watch it again, too.
All right, let's do it.
I was born to rule the Seven Kingdoms, and I will.
The Mad King's daughter will destroy the realm. We must stand together if we hope to stop her.
We can't defeat the Night King's army on our own. Daenerys has dragonfire.
A Targaryen cannot be trusted.
If we don't band together, we will die.
Winter is here, Your Grace.
Everyone is your enemy
friend. Every possible series of events is happening all at once.
I believe you have a role
to play. Ooh.
I think the end of that trailer is probably, in my opinion, the biggest revelation that we get out of all of this new footage.
Really?
I just feel like Melisandre talking about other players with Dany is kind of a big thing.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I think that the Euron, the scene, is very telling.
Being paraded through the street?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, I think that when you look at him and you see that particular picture of him that they're showing him, you see in his hand he has two ropes, and these two ropes, one in each hand, it looks more like a leash.
So he's got his gift.
I think he got multiple gifts.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the gifts that keep on giving.
I feel like since you just broke down this trailer today for your YouTube channel, you have a slight advantage on us. So that brings us to our first question. We were going to get into a lot of other things, but I think that some of it will naturally come up. Our first question, what gift will Euron bring Cersei?
I feel like there's a decent consensus on this in terms of the top three answers that we've got from our question answers on Watchers and on Facebook. But in light of this trailer, I think some people's choice may have changed a little bit. So the top answers that we're getting from people are it's one of the Sand Snakes. We got a couple votes for Tyrion, which is interesting.
And then the gift.
We've also got a couple people who said that either has to do with dragons or is Dragonbinder or some way for Cersei, Euron to control dragons. And I think that in light of this trailer, that probably is a little bit less likely. But I don't know what you guys' initial thoughts are in terms of who or what gift will be big enough for Euron to bring back to Cersei.
Oh, well, I think that it's obvious. It's one in each hand. He's got two people with him. I think it's Oberyn's Thought that's with him. That's one of them. And I think it's got to be Yarsha. I think that's who's with him.
So you think that it's Ilaria and you think that it's Asha.
Yarsha. Yeah, Yarsha.
I like it.
That's who it is. It has to be. I can't see it being anyone else because you see in the other trailers, he gets into the sea battle with them. We see her jumping from one ship to the other ship. We see her looking up, and then we see the other trailer with Theon by himself collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he escapes. And I think those two get bagged up. And then, you know, we've also seen her making out with the other girl. So it's kind of like a last kiss. I think that it's quite possible that she got, like we see in the other trailer, it's Yarsha telling Dany we should attack right now. And I don't think Dany's going to go for it. And it could be the Sand Snake that's not convincing her, hey, we don't need her. Let's just go do it ourselves. And they take off during that night and then they get caught on their own.
Mm-hmm,
because I think that's the only way it could really go down. Because if they were together and they had Dany's dragons, they shouldn't lose. But if they just try to jump out there on their own, I think that's how they're going to fall.
And I definitely think that Yara isn't important enough on her own to be brought as a gift. And so to pair that with Ilaria, that's definitely much more plausible than a single person.
Yeah, I don't know if Cersei would care much for just a single Greyjoy captive.
I don't think so either.
Maybe a little bit.
I don't think she has anything with them.
Right. So you think that the Sand Snakes... So if the Sand Snakes aren't captured, and if Tyrion's not captured, that would leave the Sand Snakes still out there to potentially protect Ilaria and Yarsha. If they felt inclined to do so.
Yeah, I think it's possible they're probably bagged up too. Anyone who's on that boat with them, and we see them fighting on the boat too, I think Theon, because Theon is by himself when he gets away and on that beach.
Right.
So I don't see anyone else. So they're probably captured. He probably has them all. He probably has every... And I think they want to get rid of Dawn. I think the showrunners, they know what they did to Dawn. And I think they're trying to get rid of it. So if this is just a way to try to satisfy everybody who hates Dawn from
Shout
the show.
To me.
And just like, hey, look, we're going to kill him off for you. And we're going to kill him off in a dramatic way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the Sand Snakes, Ilaria, all of them are the most likely candidates in terms of people that Cersei actually cares about bringing vengeance to. I think that a lot of people have questions about whether or not it could be Tyrion. And I think that the reason why that's less likely, in my opinion, is because I just feel like Tyrion so often has played the captive that his impact just isn't enough for him to be a captive once again. You know what I mean? And so I just think that, like, I just don't think that that could happen.
But if Tyrion was captured, I mean, that is a hell of a spice to the mid-season arc or the beginning season arc. It's a hell of a spice to Cersei's plan. And we had some comments, and it's one of the first things that I thought of. And I know that it's just reading too much into the lines, but I think of season 5 when Tyrion was like, I am the gift. And then Euron says right. it, and it kind of poetically makes sense. But I just think that Euron Greyjoy would have a really, really tough time if they're still at Dragonstone infiltrating that entire keep and capturing Tyrion Lannister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think Tyrion's on the boats with them when they get into that battle, because you see Yarsha looking up with Theon into the flames.
And right.
That's when that dragon flames coming at them. So I don't think he's with them. I think he's back in King. And he's too... That would be too much to give him, because whoever gets caught, there's no escape for them. There's not like you're going to get out of this. You're dead. You know, they're going to be executed and pretty bad. So I think Tyrion's way too important to get caught by Euron.
I think so, too. And I really like what you said, Tony, about them, Yarsha. Theon, I'm sorry. We'll just always
laugh.
I
think we need to use that from now on, honestly.
I know.
That's it.
And Theon to be persuaded to leave and to attack. I like that. And that's why they're not with the rest of the crew that's at Dragonstone. And so I think that's an interesting thought. I like it.
What are your thoughts on Dragonbinder having its part in the show at all?
I can't see it. I don't see it. They would have had to bring it out during the King's Moot. You know, why that's when he had it. That's when he blows it for the first time. They did the mm-hmm. King's Moot. If they were going to do it, they would have did it then. The fact that they didn't do it, it shows that he has to be here for another reason. And the other reason he's here and Victorion's not casted is because he's the one who gets with Cersei. That's the role he plays. I live in a rabbit hole on Teflon TV. You know, Alice and me, we're best friends. And that's just the way it is, a Cheshire Cat. So I'm down here in this hole. And I tell people all the time that Euron is the Valonqar.
Ooh.
So,
okay.
That is why he's been casted in this show. And that's the reason why he's casted over Vic. And that's his importance, is that he's going to be the one to take Cersei out in the end.
So in the episode where they were talking and they were like, but you killed your brother, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you should try it. It's amazing. So that's not...
I mean, yeah. And when you look at, you know, the things, especially from the Forsaken chapter, when you look at the things he's done to women already.
Right.
And in that chapter itself, when you look at it, he has, when he has his brother in the dream, he's sitting next to a woman, and she's tall, and he's on the Iron Throne, and she's described as tall with a pale neck. And obviously, the prophecy for Cersei when she dies is that the Valonqar will put her hands around her pale neck. And then mm-hmm. we have Euron in the show say specifically, I have two hands,
mm-hmm.
and saying that Jaime doesn't have mm-hmm. two hands. So everyone who thinks that Jaime can do it, he's telling you, Jaime doesn't have two hands to do it, but I do have two hands.
That's one of the things that I've been curious about when we're talking about Jaime Lannister and the Valonqar theory, is how his mutilation plays into it.
Yeah, I think that's the number one factor why he won't do it. I know a lot of people want him to do it, but I think Jaime, as he said, he wants to die in the arms of the woman he loves. I don't think that's Cersei. Most likely that would be Brienne.
Heck yeah.
So Hannah, what do you think about all this now?
That's my addition to that.
What do you think about the Valonqar stuff with Euron?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely haven't necessarily been thinking about Euron as Valonqar myself. I think that I tend to fall into the camp of thinking that it's Jaime, just for no other reason than because that's what I think. And so I kind of get focused in on that and don't explore other options. But I mean, I think that it wouldn't surprise me, given what we are thinking that we're seeing with Euron and Cersei's potentially close relationship. I mean, we saw in this trailer that they're standing side by side. And so we know that he brings back this gift, whatever it is. And so that they're going to have some sort of relationship going forward over the next couple of episodes. And so is it going to be a good relationship? I don't know. So, I mean, I don't think it's out of the question.
Well, do you guys think that it's going to happen in the next episode? Because of the trailer and because of the title of the episode being Stormborn? Or do you see the Euron stuff with Cersei and the gift extending over, you know, up to episode 4, let's say, or episode 3?
It's a very long episode. So it depends how long the sea battle goes. But the sea battle, I would hope that maybe, what are they going to give, 15 minutes to the battle, maybe the most?
That'd be cool. Mm-hmm.
If we're lucky, 20. So they have plenty of time after that to get to do all this. So I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think that this trailer just covers the next couple episodes. Like, I don't think that this trailer that we saw today goes past mid-season. And so I think that we've got a lot of ground to cover in this storyline in the next short amount of time.
But do you guys like what's happening with Euron and Cersei?
I love it.
Yeah. Yes.
I love it. I'm glad it's happening.
I do. I like it. And I like that. I think that Euron's character, and I know that last episode we just talked about how I was falling in love with him, but I do really think that his character has brought a lot of depth to the screen. I think that it's difficult to kind of introduce a major player this late in this season or this late in the game from a TV perspective, but I do feel like he is going to bring out an interesting side of Cersei. And I think that it's going to be really cool to see him play off of her because they both have this bit of madness in them. And so I'm really looking forward to watching them interact more and more, and also to watch Jamie watch them interact.
This guy, he's growing on me. Like, when I first seen him, I figured they just casted him because he looks like Theon, kind of, you know? And right. I always, if in the books, like in my head, and it's just stuck in my head, and I just think Mads Mikkelsen, when I think of Euron, that's just so the cool face that pops up in my head every time. So it's hard, you know, when I'm always thinking about this is the way the guy should look, he'd be perfect for it. And then I see this guy, and this guy looks like one of my bar friends.
Pacey.
And acts like him.
Yeah.
The next spinoff, Euron's Creek. I mean, you know, wardrobe stuff aside, I know we talked about it a little bit on our first episode of the week, but I think you're on season 6, you're on season 7. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a good move.
Also, everyone over the past couple of days online, the Game of Thrones fan community have been highlighting all of the wonderful black leather costumes or fake leather, depending on what they're wearing. And Euron was not one to miss it. I was just rewatching the episode, and he had all of his wonderful frayed threads coming off. I guess that's the look.
Yeah, well, they have him dressing like a pirate.
Yeah.
You know, put an eye patch on him. I mean, I know. Out of all this, how much budget do they have per show? I mean, and you can't put an eye patch on this guy? I mean, I can go to the dollar store.
Yeah.
I can get you one and stick it. That's all I asked for, is an eye patch. That's not too much.
Especially, I mean, we talk a lot about like book to screen adaptations and why they made specific choices that they did. And we think about things like Dany's eyes. We understand why they didn't make them purple. But when something like this, it's such an easy and simple fix just to put an eye patch on him. But I don't know. I don't make the rules. He would look maybe even more like an off-brand pirate than he already does.
Beric Dondarrion does have an eye patch.
True.
Yeah. And that was a wonderfully ceremonial transition into our next question.
I like it.
Which is pretty standard. Why is Beric still alive? Why are they with Sandor Clegane? Why are they here?
I think that these are pretty short and straightforward questions, but I think that we left the first episode with a lot of thoughts and feelings about this whole storyline with the Hound and with Beric Dondarrion and Theros, and kind of what is Sandor Clegane's role going forward? What did he see in the flames? Is this real? Is he Azor Ahai? What's going on? And so I think this question of what Beric Dondarrion's purpose is plays into a lot of what the Hound's purpose is as well, because they're tied together, they're traveling together, they are working together. And so curious to hear what your guys' thoughts are on their movement going forward and kind of the legitimacy of what the Hound is seeing.
They're either eating the same mushrooms or it's legitimate magic.
Yes.
I think, so Avis said, I'm in this hole, so you got to come in here with me for a little bit. When we look at Beric Dondarrion, we see last year, he says to the Hound, R'hllor, the god, red god, let you beat me, why? And he didn't have an answer. And then we have the Hound this year basically asking him the same exact question.
Right.
When you look at what Beric is from his role in the books to now, the only thing I think that he does is show that life force can be transferred from one person to another using the Kiss of Life. Okay. That's only the reason why Lady Stoneheart to me exists in the books, beyond the vengeance, and the vengeance isn't good and stuff, but mostly it's to show that you can transfer one person's life force into another.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if it was the book situation, that's quite possible that this would be Lady Stoneheart's last stand, and she does it for John. And as we've seen how bad she feels, Catelyn, about everything that she's done, treated him and stuff. They showed that in the show.
My God, I love this rabbit hole so much, Tony. Can you imagine if that's what shook out with Catelyn and John?
I think it's quite possible.
Oh my gosh.
I think it would give her a final thing if she just gave her her life force, and mm-hmm. he came back to life. So I think quite possibly we can see that somehow go on with Beric when he gets to the wall. When I think about the Hound, I think about Jon Snow as the last hero. And we know with the last hero, he has his companions. They go looking for the Children of the Forest, and everyone dies. And then it's just him and his dog. And I think Jon Snow's dog is the Hound. I think that's his purpose to be there with him. I know it's deep hole.
These are good rabbit holes. No, I like that. I think that we got a couple different comments on Watchers. This one's from Derek Foster, who also agrees that show Beric is book Lady Stoneheart. And that there's definitely, he then goes and says, so whatever's going on with Jaime, and I think ultimately to get Jaime's Valyrian steel sword to someone in the north, the Hound seems a likely candidate. And so I like this idea that Beric is kind of taking on what Lady Stoneheart would have if Lady Stoneheart was in the show, or kind of what this Lady Stoneheart narrative looks like in the books. And so I think that's a good comparison.
What does that mean for the technology in which they're brought back? Because I know that's been part of a lot of discussion after George's interview with Time Magazine and like the Firewhite conversation, and where that lands John, and where we pretty much know exactly where that lands Beric Dondarrion.
I think that when you have people that come back to life in every movie that I've seen, usually people that come back to life, they have a mission to fulfill, whether mm-hmm. they're bad guys or good guys, and they come back for revenge or whatever. But as soon as they're done with the mission, they usually die. They usually go back to where they were. So I think it means that Jon Snow, number one, will not sit the Iron Throne no matter what. And then it gets to the question of, what do you think is going on with the Whites? Are they resurrected, or are they being warped? So if they're being warped, and you want to believe that, or skin changed, whatever you wish to call it, if they're being skin changed and someone's controlling them, like the Night's King's controlling all his Whites, then you have to say somebody is controlling Beric at this particular time.
And is it the Lord of Light?
Well, me personally, the hole is deep. I don't think that there is a Lord of Light. I think that every piece of magic, blood magic, can be attributed to the Children of the Forest and the Green Seers. So I think that when you look at everything that's being done, it all happens to them. It's all because of them. When you look at Melisandre's chapter, and she sees Blood Raven, and she really thinks that he's the Great Other. And the reason why she says he's not the Great Other is because he's not ugly enough. You know, that's her excuse. And he's just not, he would look worse, you know, than that.
He might have a necklace too, you know?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, everything that we see, every piece of magic, all gets attributed, I think, goes back to the show. I think there, the only gods there is the Green Seers. Talking to the flames, all the magic that we see, whispers of the Great Other, Melisandre says. That's what people who get inside people's dreams are. That's why she's afraid to sleep. And who goes inside people's dream? That is people, that's the Green Seers who do that. So when I put that together, I think that they are the one god that everyone's talking about. It's just them.
So would you say then that whatever Beric is getting this from, or who's controlling him, or kind of where this magic is coming from, that the Hound is also actually tapped into it in this scene here, or that this is kind of by chance?
I think that he's seeing what they're trying to show him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's the Green Seer that's showing it to him at mm-hmm. that particular
through
time.
Through the fire instead of through the weirwood.
Yep, this time yeah. right through the fire instead of through the weirwood. If it's the same magic, same type of situation, the same way they do it. The same way we have, when you look at, I look at it like kind of the weirwood as the past. That's when all the past stuff is shown. The fire as the future. And the glass candles as the here and now.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. I look at all three phases of the Green Sea of magic for sight.
Not to change gears too much, because I want to stay on this, but when you look at the letter that was zoomed in, not the letter, the textbook, the information that Sam and Gilly were studying at Old Town, and we get the hints of the healing properties of the dragon glass. Where do you think, if the Children of the Forest are the base level of the magic, including the fire and the weirwood trees, like where does that come in? Because I think of Old Valyria, and I think of where Grayscale potentially began, where it's definitely a hotbed that we've seen. You know, how are those things all connected?
When I look at how Grayscale came about, it was really a guy praying, right? He was captured, and he said a prayer to the Great Mother Roin. And then after that, the mist rose, and then the people turned to Grayscale. They got contracted it. It's a prayer. Every time we see people praying, it's usually to the Children of the Forest. We see it with Howland Reed. He said a prayer when he got to the Isle of Faces. And then all of a sudden, his prayer was answered. So I think the only people that we see answering prayers, and you know, are the Children of the Forest. Even when you deal with the many-faced god for them, when you look at that, and Arya first gets there and she meets the kindly man, he has a worm in his eye, and she pulls it out. It's the same exact thing that happens when Bran meets Bloodraven. He has the worm in his eye, too. Mm-hmm. It's the same face. So I think that when you look at many-faced god, who it is, it's a person who can warg, who can skin change into many faces. So I think it all goes back again to the Green Seers and the Children of the Forest.
So ultimately, I think this is all going to go back to Brandon Stark.
I think at any end, it will all go back to Brandon Stark. Yes.
So is he the three-eyed raven from before, or is he a new three-eyed raven?
Yeah, you know, that's a hard question for me to ask.
I want to see how deep the hole is.
It's deep. It's real deep. I mean, he is the first thing we get. I think he's going to be the last thing we get. I think that he can affect the past. He has affected the past. He can mm-hmm. affect the future. And there's something else going on here. Me personally, I think in the end, and this is going to be sound really crazy, folks. And I know it is. So I'm just going to put it out there. I think ultimately in the end, when it's all said and done, that Bran is going to warg Jon Snow and fight the Night's King as Jon Snow. I think that's how it's going to go out. We know Bran always wanted to be a knight. I think that's how he becomes a knight. I think there's a reason why they showed him warg Hodor. I don't think that's going to be the last human being he wargs. I think the last one most likely would be Jon.
Interesting. Do you think that could play out that way on the show? Or do you think that that's too in the weeds for what they're trying to show us on the screen and more something that's a bookism?
I think if it does go down in a book like that, that they have to show it in the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've already showed Bran warg Hodor. So, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be a stretch to show him warg Jon. If Jon dies again, and that's it. If he dies again, that's the clue to me that it's definitely going to happen. Because as we said, Beric has died multiple times. I think it's just, you know, when you see someone being warged, you see them, it's hard for them to get out of the body. We see it all the time. So I think that when the person is killed, it's chasing the warg out of the body. And that's why the body's dropping. And then the warg comes back in. We've seen that with Orel, when he was in the eagle and he gets set on fire and he gets chased out of the mm-hmm. body. I think the only difference that we have here with Beric and Jon Snow is that Jon's soul is going into Ghost. So Jon's not going to lose who he is when he comes back. He's going to still be maintained. But I think that quite possibly they may have to kill Ghost to force him out of his body and back into his body.
Yeah, I don't like that.
that's the one piece that you can't get on board with.
I'm still not sure just how I feel, because we have so many variables with Beric Dondarrion and with Thoros of Myr and with the Hound. Hunting party aside, whatever they're up to north of the Wall, we can assume that Jon's with them. We've seen footage. Like we have a pretty good idea of what's coming, but all of these variables are just so fine tuned up in the air. We have so many options. I really don't know. You know, the news about the Fire Whites right before the season, it all just seems a little too, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's something we did not know. And now all of a sudden we think this.
He did that before with the Mercy chapter. And I think he wanted to get ahead of the show before they showed. And I think this is something he's doing again. So I think that's the reason why we're going to see it this season. And that's why we're going to know about it after it's done. And that's why he just wanted to get ahead of the show.
Do you think he did that independently of HBO?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He, you know, when you reach a certain age, you just don't care no more. You know, you'll say whatever. You don't care what people think about you. He just, he don't care right
well,
now.
He still wants to control the way that we think about the story because it's his.
It's his.
You know?
It is. And I think he wants people to think that I made this up. This is for me. You know, yeah. They didn't do this. I'm the one who thought of this.
Having all that been said, how do the Children of the Forest feel about Beric Dondarrion if they're continually giving him life? Is his purpose to guide Jon Snow?
I think it is. I think it's most likely it's the Green Seer, so it's not the children themselves.
Right,
right. It's Blood Raven. So say Blood Raven's the one doing it right now because he's the Green Seer at the time. Mm-hmm. So I think that it is to guide Jon Snow and get him up there and to help fight against the White Walkers to give him this last bit of life that he has to have. I think Jon Snow is going to catch it. And I think when he dies, that it would be Beric that'll blow the breath right into him, and that's how he's going to come back. And that'll be two deaths for him right there.
Do you think that Sandor's personal arc, all the badness and immorality that he's overcome and the change in him, do you think that has anything to do specifically with, I guess, how do I phrase this question? Is it the path that was necessary for him to go there willingly, or does it have more to do with the kind of person that he is or the kind of people that will sort of thematically surround John when life essentially tackles death? Is it supposed to be poetic, or does it mean more that he's overcome things? And I guess, will that process of him learning more about himself be the reason why he gives himself up for John?
Well, you see that the Hound himself, you see that he, from his childhood, he was touched by fire, right?
Right.
So, he's always been involved with fire some way or another. So I think it's just really coming back 360 with him. And I think that when you look at the people that are dead, right, the resurrected people that we see, the Night's King for ice, Jon Snow for fire, and then we have the Mountain for science, for term of a better word. I think it's his, he has to fight his brother. He has to take care of that undead person. I think that's why he's there in the end, the Hound, is going to take care of his brother. He's got to fight the Mountain. It's got to be
taking care of his brother is not the same way as saying Clegane Bowl.
Yeah, right.
But I think it's going to be both of them together. I think it's going to be Jaime Lannister and him combined fighting him, because there's a prophecy that says he saw Bran's first prophecy, actually, that he gets his first dream. He says he saw a hound face. And then he saw Jaime Lannister, someone golden in the sun and beautiful, and that's Jaime Lannister. And then he sees a face of a mountain with black goo coming out of his visor. And I think that's the Mountain right then. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the reason why they're putting Jaime Lannister, the Hound, and the Mountain together, because those two will have to take both of their strength to take this guy out.
And you think that Jaime's going to pass and the Hound's going to take his sword?
Yeah, I think Jaime does pass away, and I think the Hound takes his sword. I think anyone with a Valyrian steel sword will eventually fight a White Walker. There's no other reason to give them that
sword.
What
about a dagger?
Right.
Yes, I have a video on Arya Stark and that dagger.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's like I was looking at your detective work is like, is ridiculous. Just the zooms and the...
I appreciate it.
Well, man, these are like fears that I've had and conversations that I've had with friends like Aziz and Shay and Sean and like Quentin, who spoke and waxed ridiculous sermon poetic at Con of Thrones about the Eldritch Apocalypse. And I'm not going to get into that because I'm sure that you have a lot of opinions on Euron's future. But again, just all of this being said, unexpected. The before the episode preview where we had a reminder of Beric and the other boys saying, like, listen, it's not too late. You can still be of use to the realm. That kind of thing, I think, maybe gets swept under the rug a little bit between seasons 6 and 7. So it was good to be reminded of it. But I mean, they went right into it on this first episode. We've got the Hound all of a sudden looking into the fire, seeing a mountain that looks like an arrowhead, and we can assume that it's not the mountain, but his damn helmet kind of looks like an arrowhead, this new helmet.
Yeah, my friend Maester Payne, he said a long time ago, and people laughed at him when he said this, over 3 years ago, he said, what if the Hound, when he got burned by his brother, he seen something in the flames back then? And he said that over 3 years ago, and everyone's like, oh, Hound ain't seeing nothing in the flames. And then, whoop, here we go. He is seeing stuff in the flames. So quite possibly,
shout out to him.
That is a chance that did happen back then.
So do you think that the Hound is Azor Ahai?
No.
No. Let's get down to it.
Who do you think?
Azor Ahai, yeah. Nisa, John and Danny.
John and Danny?
That's what it is. Yeah, it has to be.
I feel like the last bit of that trailer that we saw today kind of sparked some of that
I think that's the kicker.
Yeah.
And I think, especially when you deal with Melisandre, and I hear people talk about Melisandre a lot, and this is another person who is glamored to, she's supposed to be 400 years, and she's glamored to look young, but makeup's not going to keep you alive. You could put, you know, makeup on a 400-year skeleton, it's still going to be a skeleton. So there's something else going on with her that's keeping her alive other than this glamour that's mm-hmm. going through. I don't think people talk about that enough. But what's going on? What's keeping Melisandre alive for 400 years?
Well, did she know that? Does she understand that the magic is coming from essentially the same wellspring? Or does she think that they're separate forces that are battling?
I think they all believe that it's separate forces. No one knows exactly where it's coming from, except for the faceless men tell you, you know, in a roundabout way. But when you deal with the great other and Valor and all them, I think they think that they're two separate entities, but they're not.
So what do you think about the theory that George R. R. Martin is the great other?
he's writing the whole book series. So I guess he's everybody in the book series. You want to go that route.
It's a good theory.
It is. There's no doubt about it. He could be. I mean, I heard this theory that Stan Lee is the Watcher, you know, so that's why he keeps popping up in everybody's movies. So, you know, who knows? They may just do it. It could be that too.
I feel like our next question means nothing now that we've talked about the Children of the Forest and Beric Dondarrion and Valonqar, all this kind of stuff, but still important for the next couple episodes. So question 3 says, Jon and Sansa disagree on what to do with the Karstarks and Umbers. Ultimately, Jon decides to let them keep their lands. Was this the right decision? How will Jon and Sansa's relationship impact future politics?
The only way it really works to me is if Sansa is playing a game right now. If she's just arguing with Jon in front of everybody, just so Littlefinger could see it, so she can put on a show.
Yeah, that's what I think.
So she's misdirecting Littlefinger to get...
Think there's a wedge between her and Jon.
If you look at Jon and Sansa's relationship when they're alone, they very much have this very open dialogue and great communication between each other. And we see them have that conversation. Whether or not they necessarily disagree or necessarily agree on the next move is a different question. But I feel like the wedge that is between them, quote unquote, is very much out in front of people. But when they're together, they seem to have a pretty open dialogue. And so I like this theory that what she did in undermining Jon in front of everybody was specifically for playing at Littlefinger and not because she's just trying to wreck everything. Because I think that Sansa is too smart. And as she mentioned in this episode, she's learned from some great players, even if we don't necessarily agree with Cersei's every move. She still has had a great education on how to play the game.
And she says she knows what Littlefinger wants, and that's sex. And Cersei has told her that, you know, that's what you got to do. I think that's what she's doing this, and then she's going to have sex with Littlefinger. That's going to cement it, and then he's out of here. He's gone.
You think that that's what he really wants in the end?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what he wants.
It's just a breakdown of his character. I feel like he's been so strong in the sense of not that he's been against his relationship with Sansa at all. Actually, it's been the most annoying thing and definitely the weakest thing that he's put out. But we constantly pit Varys and Littlefinger against each other. And I guess in the past, we always saw them as equal in some ways. But the way that Varys blocks out that part of his life and he's able to pass by so many complications and stay out of a lot of struggles that, I don't know, something like Littlefinger could get himself into. I mean, do we really think that that's what he's doing? That he's sort of lost his grip and that he's completely fallen into the Sansa rabbit hole? Or do you think that he's still Littlefinger, or I guess in a way where he's operating on a higher level?
I think that we've always said that Sansa was going to be Littlefinger's downfall. You know, I think that we've had these conversations in the past that if he's going to mess up or make the wrong step or make the wrong move, that it was partially or somehow, some way going to involve Sansa. And so, you know, is she the only reason why he's going to go down? Is he not thinking clearly. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily that drastic. I think that there's definitely some good reason for him to be aligning himself the way that he is, but I do think that it's not out of the realm of possibility for Littlefinger to misstep or make the wrong move because of her and how he feels for her.
I think this is his, who he's always been his whole life. This is a guy who loves Catelyn until from the time he was a child till he was a 40, 30 or whatever, a grown ass man. And now when he wants someone, he likes someone, he gives his all to him. And now it's Sansa. It was Cat. Now he's obsessed with her. And now he's pushed his obsession over her and he's not thinking clear. And I think that's the advantage that Varys has over him right now. So I think that, you know, maybe this is the thing, you know, Varys becoming a dick kebab, for the lack of a better word. That's the thing that he has. That's what's going to make him win in the end over Littlefinger. That he doesn't think about those things.
Right.
With the new trailer from SDCC, it's pretty clear that Jon is about to find out about Daenerys in a big way. And it's pretty clear that this is going to be a complication with things that are happening in Winterfell, the way that they are, with Littlefinger being there. With us just talking about Sansa's, I guess, misdirection and change, I feel better about this situation. But I just know that the idea of Jon leaving reminds me so much of Jon leaving in the past. And, you know, just to look at our question, how will Jon and Sansa's relationship impact future politics of Winterfell and Westeros? I just see him leaving as an opportunity for someone like Littlefinger to try things behind his back, or for bad things to happen when he's not there for. Not to mention all the stuff that's going to happen with Sansa, or with Daenerys and him. It's going to be so cool.
I don't think it's horrible that Jon's leaving. I think that the only thing that would give me pause in Jon leaving is whether or not Bran makes it to Winterfell. And talking about rightful claims in terms of who's the Lord of Winterfell, I think that that's probably more of a question than Sansa staying in charge. You know, I think that Sansa's too smart for someone like Littlefinger to take her down at this point. I think that we've seen pretty clearly that she knows what she's doing. So I think that Sansa and Jon are much more aligned than we are supposed to believe right now.
And that's what you think, Tony?
Yeah, I think so. I think this has got to be game.
I was completely fooled by Sansa in this episode, so good work.
I mean, do you think that it's going to be an issue for her to be left alone in Winterfell with Littlefinger?
Not if she's playing Littlefinger like this. I knew that she was playing Littlefinger, but I did think, just judging by the looks and stuff from last episode, that, or from the season 6 finale, that there was something to Sansa's feelings. You know what I mean? But her bringing it up in front of everyone during their meeting in that same long haul in Winterfell, that was a little suspicious, and we kind of made fun of it. So it seemed like a non-Sansa move, and I said that on Monday. And so it makes a lot more sense now, and I feel a lot better about it.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, thank you.
Who needs to feel better about Sansa Stark?
You have to leave soon. It's a bummer. We're definitely going to get you back for a round two at some point. But before we move any further, what do you think about this next episode, Tony?
Thank you for having me, and I'm sorry that I do have to go. I wish I could not have to cut this short.
We should give this a couple hours next time. I have so many things to ask you.
I think what we're going to see next episode, what I'm hoping to see, I think we're going to see a great sea battle. We haven't seen one yet. I think we're going to see a phenomenal sea battle. I think that's going to be it. We're going to see Jon meet with Daenerys. I think we're going to see that, or he's going to make his way to Dragonstone. Long episodes makes me think that he will get there with her. And I think that we're going to see the execution of Yarsha and Oberyn Stark.
TM, TM, TM. You got to TM those.
Today's show is brought to you by SimpliSafe.
Thousands of people seeking home security get ripped off every day. You can get locked into long-term contracts, stuck writing huge checks with no way out. It's robbery itself, and it can cost you thousands. Now there's a smarter way to protect your home, SimpliSafe Home Security. These are the guys I trust.
Here's why. SimpliSafe has no contracts. There's no commitments, no lock-ins, period. Plus, it was built by a Harvard-educated engineer to make you safer. It's wireless and portable with a cellular connection built in. And you get professional monitoring with police dispatch, so your home is safe around the clock. Best of all, with SimpliSafe, 24/7 protection is just $15 a month. Most places charge three times that.
It's unbeatable protection, a great value, and there's no contracts.
And right now, SimpliSafe is having its biggest summer sale ever, $100 off the special safeguard package. you can visit simplysafe.com/listen to get this deal. Hurry, the sale ends soon.
That's simplysafe.com/listen.
Thanks to SimpliSafe.
And now the moment that we've all been waiting for, our first owns of season 7.
Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Hey, this is Haley Bowery from the band The Manimals. This is our song Summer, which is basically our Bohemian Rhapsody all about Bran Stark and the Three-Eyed Raven. And we would all like to wish you a very happy Game of Owns.
First up on Twitter, we have Rochelle Williams, owned to Euron Greyjoy for putting Jaime on notice this episode. Who has two thumbs and can marry your sister? This guy. #served, #eatingcrow.
Yeah. Sarah Clinton, sympathetic own goes to Sam, the unlikeliest member of Professor Slughorn's Slug Club. #SamWellTarly and the Chamber Pot of Secrets. #BowlsOfBrown.
Kristen Aria, own goes to Thoros and Rollo for using the flames to confirm Cleganebowl 2K17. There's a mountain in the north, ... with a lot of emojis that says get hype in all caps.
Casey Margaret, my own goes to all the badass females in this episode. Arya, Sansa, Dany, Lady Mormont, and even Cersei all slayed. #WhoRunTheWorld, #girls.
Janine Stevenson, my own goes to Sansa for calling out both Ned and Rob for being honorable but stupid. If Jon stands a chance, need to learn how to play the great game, and Sansa seems to be the only one close to him who really gets that.
Jenny Schaefer Mira, own to Euron's Tinder profile. Looks great in leather pants and has two good hands. Own to Sam for dealing with shit all day and never taking his mind off his true goal. And own to the Hound for making that switch from the most cynical SOB on the show to handing out prophecies from the Lord of Light. And there are a bunch of sunglasses emojis.
My favorite emoji.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we have Travis Cole, who says, OMG, this is so hard. Plus, I'm used to giving chapter owns now. My own has to go to the Hound, as he is his regular, salty, comical self, but you can really see his guarded compassion break through. #Sure bet he misses that rabbit stew.
And Manny Amini gives us 3 owns. Jorah for unnecessarily scaring the shit out of Samwell. #MoreShitToClean. #AtLeast It's His Own. Euron for slipping in an obvious hand joke. #HeavyHanded. Ha ha ha. #LikeJaime. And Tormund for being into S&M. Because of course he is. #LuckyMan. #Tormund is coming.
Gil Pound, owned to Game of Thrones sound and video editing Pete's for dropping that sick beat in the Sam sequence.
Will Netterville, owned to the Lord Commander Tormund of House Giantsbane for restoring the Night's Watch to its former glory. Looks like we're the Night's Watch now.
Bob Kaposia, easiest own of all time. Arya for that opening scene. Big body count right off the bat. Time to catch up, other Starks.
She killed so many people. Matthew Movenzi, owned to the Hound for realizing the irony of his situation. Just my luck, I end up with a bunch of fire worshippers. #firebad. #thereisnodivinejustice.
Erica Lesto, my own goes to Arya Stark because ... family reunions. #trythejunglejuice. #lifeofthepartyparty. #keepingupwiththephrase. #thenorthremembers.
Dylan Jane L, own to the foreshadowing when the Hound looks into the fire. I see a wall. Massive crack from the fire. That sucker is coming down. Hound sees wall 2K17.
Anna Ollie, owned to Tormund's eyebrow.
Kate Bell, owned to Lyanna Mormont because like hell she's going to knit by the fire.
And Joseph Sellers coming in with a similar owned to Lyanna Mormont. I don't need your permission to defend the North.
And Peggy Ruiz, my own goes to that map painter. All that work and that bitch is walking all over his art.
Angela Birmingham, owned to Ed Sheeran for being the only ginger in the South.
Amy G. Dalla, owned to Ed Sheeran for dropping Westeros' hottest single of the season. Download it on your Bard now.
Shannon Morris Talbert, owned to the dragons flying over Dragonstone. Also, the Hound Gravedigger reference.
Jennifer Gregory, owned to Dollar Zed for rocking that bear cape. #shoulderpads.
Jill Van Sickle, my own goes to the Citadel Library and its apparent lack of every single cookbook.
Elizabeth Apodaca, owned to Arya for draining the Frey Swamp. #droppingbodies. #OldEnglishStark, stomach tattooing. That's a lot.
Santiago Sanchez, owned to I'm gonna kill the queen, LOL.
Oh, it was, by the way, Old English Stark stomach tattoo on the next episode.
Good one. Jared Kozal, owned to the sheer majesty of Dany's arrival on Dragonstone. Ramin's score, Amelia's performance, all of it. #WelcomeHome, my queen.
Dan Firmage, my own goes to the Night King for his backstage pass to Westeros, courtesy of Bran getting dragged into a tunnel. #ColdOpening.
And @Zaylis on Twitter, owned to Euron's half-open shirt, meeting a queen. Button up that shirt, discount Jack Sparrow.
He didn't get dressed up, did he? Kristen Burford, Ona Sam's Max Hold hair gel. He might clean shit, but he doesn't have to look like shit. And to those sweet ass sandals. Summer ready.
Jenny girl, my own, goes to Sansa for barely being able to hold back an eye roll at Littlefinger. What a creep. Hashtag she's just not that into you.
HLK on Twitter, Ona the Hound for rightly man bun shaming Thoros. Hashtag top nut. Top knot, hashtag get a haircut.
Jenny of Tarth says, own to the look Gilly gives Sam when he writes to John. Look at my man trying to save the world.
Chris Decker writes, Jaime Lannister, superior math skills. Ned Stark for never cursing in front of his daughters. And Robert Glover for continuously eating crow.
Dana Barry, own goes to Arya for not killing Ed Sheeran, as far as we know, and for taking out the phrase in style.
Thomas Hetty, own of the ep goes to Walder Frey's facial rejuvenation cream. Hashtag you won't believe your eyes. Hashtag it's to die for. Hashtag peels back 81 years in an instant.
Vivid Vernandi, own to the three giant whites coming our way. Hashtag oh snap.
Carolyn Bailey, own to Sansa, dot, dot, dot. No need to finish this tweet. Assume it was something clever. Hashtag Game of Bones.
That's really good. Christine Bademan, who says, own to the Hound for confirming Clegane Bowl by saying a single word, mountain. Hashtag what is hype may never die. Hashtag Clegane's never say die. Hashtag get hype.
Get hype. Bookum Dano, my own goes to the cooks at the Citadel for making sure everyone gets enough fiber. Hashtag Loose Bolton.
Loose Bowelton.
Oh, whatever.
Luca Nieto, own to Euron for making me feel sexually confused and loving it.
Mm-hmm, Luca.
This next one, we don't have to read it, but...
Jamie Goodwin writes, own to Sam for going back to school with the kid. Like a phoenix, he rose. I'll just read the next one while Hannah laughs. Fat Peak Master writes, own to that one Lannister soldier who feeds his guests first and obeys Westerosi drinking age laws.
Next is my favorite own that we got this whole time. Thank you, Wayne Wolstein, who says, own to the various sand snakes for not being in this episode.
West is Westeros writes, own to Azora Hound.
Jennifer Crayon with a simple line that says it all. Shall we begin?
Shall we begin? Jeff Christian, my own goes to the video editor of the Old Town work montage for making my friend vomit. Hashtag 30 seconds too long.
Travis Mollahan, own to the Maesters of the Citadel. We are this world's memory, Samuel Tarly. Hashtag Sam writes a song of ice and fire.
Our friend Brianne on Twitter writes, own to Euron's giant fuck off ship, Arya's bartending skills, and Sam's steel stomach.
Francis Lannister, my own goes to the Hound because what goes a hound comes around.
Heathen King, own to that I fucking Tormund gave Brienne, telling Pod he was a lucky man. Had me rolling. Hashtag Tormund Brienne 2K17 get hype. Hashtag Jamie who?
And Jen Calhoun, who says, own to Brienne looking at Lyanna like, is that young me? I love her. Want seven of her. I can win this war with an army of seven of this girl.
And finally, Rowan Abbott with our final own of the first episode. Own to Arya for wiping out six seasons of problems in about 2 minutes. Hashtag never feast at the twins. The hashtag game in 2K17 has hashtag stepped up its hashtag game. Mm-hmm. Good job, everyone.
We love it. Thank you guys so much
for
sending those in. It's always my favorite thing to read through everything as they come in on Sundays and then spend the week kind of scrolling through and laughing out loud at a lot of these. So thanks everyone who participates and sends us your thoughts throughout the episode.
Wait, Tony, we never asked you your own of the episode. Of the first episode. What's your favorite moment from the first episode?
Oh, geez. Yeah,
this is your first one.
I can answer all these questions, and this is the one that I'm going to get stumped on. my favorite moment of the episode. I'm going to go with every time I see her, and every word that comes out of her mouth is my favorite. So, Lyanna Mormont. I love her. I just love her so much. I don't want her to talk to me like that, but I like it when she does it to other people.
Yep.
So, that's my favorite at moment.
Good. I like it.
Well, Tony of House Teflon, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. It was such an awesome time to meet you
it's
and hang out at Con of Thrones, and this has been even more fun.
Yeah, thank you very much first for having me at Con of Thrones, allowing me on the panels. That was a great
time. It was a pleasure.
Allowing me on your podcast. This is just a great time. And listen, anybody, if you, my rabbit hole is big and I know it's deep, but if anyone wants to take a trip down, you know, come to Teflon TV, YouTube, you know, I'm definitely be there. Investigate and debate. And my channel is really just a discussion. All I do is put out ideas and I want to hear your comments. I like to hear people's comments back. And I'm not looking for people to agree with me. I'm just looking for comments so that we can just go back and forth with it. And that's what I'm
You're
like.
Definitely one of my favorite people to talk about A Song of Ice and Fire with. And I mean that. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
And thanks for taking us down rabbit holes. We appreciate it.
Hope you can find your way out now.
I'm working on it. Before we leave, if you're not listening to our new series, Rewatch the Throne, we're still going through, we're in the middle of the second season right now, actually the last part, Hannah, of the second season while we're handling season seven. So the crossovers are ridiculous. The hints and the clues are fun and it's all on Stitcher Premium. You can find our new show at rewatchthethrone.com.
When you're done hitting up Teflon TV, it's been a big week for Game of Thrones podcasts on iTunes. And so we encourage you to go over there, check that out, find us and rate and review us so that other people can find our show and send in their own owns and participate with us as well. So go to iTunes.
And if two episodes of Game of Owns a week and Rewatch the Throne is not enough for you, we have extra content at our Patreon page at patreon.com/Q. If you are into the idea of supporting our podcast, we appreciate it very, very much.
We are not very long away from episode 2 of season 7, so we're rolling through the season and we're excited to be back on early next week with our review of the next episode.
And if you're not yet convinced, go look at all of Tony's social accounts at Tony Teflon. He's one of our favorite people to follow / listen to, etc. We know that you're going to enjoy it, especially right now during the season. Tony, thanks again. I know we've said thank you about 50 times, but thanks for coming on, man.
And I'll say thank you again. And to all my people out there, peace and stay sexy.